It gives me great pleasure to announce our 10-minute speaker, Glenn P. from Santa Maria.
Thank you. I'm Glenn. I'm an alcoholic. Hello, everyone. Welcome to all the new people that raised their hand and identified. And if you're sitting in this room and you didn't identify, welcome to you, too. And I want to thank Jeanette for asking me to come up and speak for 10 minutes. And I promised her that I'd give her plenty of time. So I won't be long-winded tonight. I'm looking forward to hearing your pitch. I think you spoke here not too long ago, about a year ago, wasn't it? Something like that? Yeah. So I'll get right into it. It wasn't my first trip in here. And my sobriety date is October 1st, 2015. So I'm just shy, like 2 days of 1,000 days, which is huge for me because I never would have dreamed of putting the bottle down for more than a couple of minutes when I got in this last time. And the one thing that changed for me this last time coming in was that I took direction. I actually listened to somebody and was willing to go to any length to stay sober because my back pocket plans were all used up. I had no more willingness for just having good intentions. Because I had been here before, my intentions were good. Sobriety looked good on you, but it just wasn't really my cup of tea. And I ignored these two sayings on the wall here and over here. This one, I thought I can still control and enjoy my drinking. And this one, I still had quite a bit of judgment on what this group or what Alcoholics Anonymous had to offer. I didn't feel at any particular time that it was going to be something long term. I wasn't really sold on the idea that sobriety was going to be for me. I just wanted to control and enjoy my life without alcohol. But I found out this last time coming in, that was the problem, was that I was trying to control and enjoy my life without alcohol. And what I mean by that, staying sober this time around, I've been able to see the differences in my program from the before. Before, I was working steps, but I wasn't getting real honest. And now I'm working steps, and I'm getting real honest. And I'm uncovering things I've never seen before. And then when I look at you and I see how sobriety works in your life, and I pay attention in the meeting, sometimes, when I pay attention in the meeting, and I listen to your stories and how you stay sober and what's going on in your life and your struggles and the things that you've accomplished and what you're looking forward to and the things that you're not looking forward to and you stay sober, that gives me hope that I'm not alone. Because I process things so differently. My mind, my perception, the way I look at you, how I feel, the way things are going on around me, you know, when somebody's doing something that is none of my business, and then I pay attention to that and make it my business, I now know that that's none of my business. See, I didn't know that before when I came in here. In fact, I just kind of like stirred the pot even thicker. And I'd make it even worse. And I make it worse for you and I make it worse for me. And, you know, sobriety is a journey. And I've had to learn and let go of a lot of my old ideas. And the result was nil until you let go, absolutely. I mean, there's no joke in chapter 5. It is no joke. Everything they talk about in there, you know, how to stay sober, the suggested of the steps. They say this is the program of recovery suggested. And they talk about the 12 steps. And there's a reason why that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I get to work on me when I take those steps. I'm looking on the inside. What makes me tick? Where's my perception? How am I going to stay sober today living on my own will? Step 3, I'm not. Because prior to getting here, my own will got me loaded, got me drunk, got me in a lot of pain. It cost me hours and hours and hours of time away from my family because it's a family disease. And if you have children and you're in this room, I encourage you to stay here. If you don't want to stay here for you, stay here for them. And maybe later you'll start wanting to stay here for you. You know. Alcoholics Anonymous is no joke. It has saved my life more than once. I got here in 1988. I couldn't stay here. And I tried it again in 1999. And I stayed here for 8 years, but I was just goofing off. I was just running around playing whatever, you know, and I couldn't stay here. I quit going to meetings in year five. I didn't pick up a chip in year six, seven, or eight. And I picked up a drink in year eight. Because I wasn't doing the things that were suggested here. I don't just do the steps one time. It's not something I just look on the wall and I go, okay, I'll apply those steps in my life one time. I got it. I can go do whatever it is I want to do and forget all about what I've learned here. And I'll forget about giving it back too. See, I have to do this thing like that's not a part of my life. It is my life. I have to be sold on the idea that Alcoholics Anonymous works in my life full time. That these principles are outlined in my life, so this way it changes my view so I can look at you without a lot of judgment. I still judge, but without a lot of it. I'm not perfect. You know, we're not perfect. We don't walk on water here. But if I have an outline and design for living that does work in my life, then something's going to change. It's probably going to be me. And it's going to be uncomfortable because I'm not used to change, because I'm used to running away from change. The fear comes up and I run. I'm not used to pausing and asking God for guidance and asking my sponsor for some suggestions that I need to hear. I'm not used to tough love when people say, you need to stop doing that or you're going to pick up again. If you don't change your character, you're going to drink again. You know? I mean, you can do whatever you want in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard that, but you got to pay the price. I've heard that too, but there's only one thing wrong with both of those things. Me, I'm the problem. I have to realize that before I'm willing to work on anything else. Alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, whatever your deal is, and if it's all of those things, you're in the right spot. I know that all those things are for me. And the great thing about the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book is that it describes exactly how to deal with those situations in the fourth step out of the Big Book. It talks about that. It tells you how to get through those things. It has the column list and the resentment list. And, you know, justifiable anger is probably the most rewarding event that can happen in anyone that's an alcoholic in their life, because it gives them reason to fuel the fire. But I have to let that go. And I have to tackle my fears one at a time, not all at once. And I have to get right with God and myself and with others. You know, the principles, I've been listening to a lot of speaker tapes lately, and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous are helping me to see things a little more clearly on the viewpoint of those steps working in my life. They go hand in hand. Because what I think about Alcoholics Anonymous is got to be something that's got to be profound in my life. If I think very little of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I come in here anyway and I just kind of like do half-assed work, it doesn't work. I don't get anything out of it. I might stay sober that day, but in the long run, in the short, I'm going to be dry. I'm going to get unwilling. I'm going to take my life back. And I'm going to quit coming around here. I've done it over and over and over. I'm afraid to leave Alcoholics Anonymous now. And I don't care what you think about that. It doesn't matter to me. I know what I think about it. I think it's great. I think it's a healthy fear. You know? I go to meetings consistently because I know that's where I need to be and I don't question it. I just got done with the procedure not a few hours ago. And it was fine. You know, I got done with the procedure, everything was cool, and I came to a meeting and did what I needed to do. Because this has to come first for me. You know, I'm retired now. I don't work. So I've got a lot of time left to do whatever Glenn wants to do. This was the perfect storm for me. This was exactly what I wanted before I came here. Not to be married, not to have someone nagging at me about my drink and telling me what to do, how to live, where to go, where to be. Not have a job that kept me busy for 50 to 60 hours a week. And just be left alone. Well, now, guess what? I have none of those things in my life, and I come here. Thank you, God. I didn't do that. God helped me do that. And you people helped me do that. And, you know, live and let live is probably the hardest thing to practice in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to allow you to live the way you want to live. So I love you from a distance. If I'm not willing to walk down the same path as you are in your recovery program, that's cool. Live and let live, man. Do what you got to do. I know what I need to do to stay here. You know? I try to hang with people that walk down the same path as me today. But I don't forget about the newcomer. I try and help them too. You know, it is my responsibility now that I have a little time to reach out my hand whenever somebody is suffering to be able to try and help. You know, and give away what's been so freely given to me. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It is absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me. And if it's not the best thing that's ever happened to you, just stay willing that it might be. You know? The last thing I'll share is this. I heard this on a speaker. I heard this pretty clear message, and it talked about God. And he says sometimes God shows up on our life as a superhero. Like, he just takes care of stuff right away. Boom, heals this, does this, finds me a place to live, gives me a car, gives me the relationship I want, whatever. Medical, whatever. And then sometimes he shows up in my life as a mustard seed. Think about that. What's your mustard seed? So I want to thank you for asking me to come up here and get you started. And I can't wait to hear your pitch. And thank all of you for being here.
Thank you, Glenn. Let's give Glenn another round. All right. Now it is my great, even greater pleasure to introduce Jeanette from Arroyo Grande.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeanette D, and I'm from Arroyo Grande.
Hi, Jeanette.
And I am definitely an alcoholic. I don't know how important those words would be the first time I uttered them. I walked into my first meeting. It was the end of the Big Sur camp out. There were about half a dozen people in the room. And most people weren't back yet. It was a nice warm summer day. It was the end of September. And they're going around the room when it got to me, and I said, "My name is Jeanette, and I'm an alcoholic." It was this relief. I don't know about you, but all the ways that I was trying to control my drinking, all the ways I was trying to control the aftermath and all the little scrapes I'd get myself into, it was like if I could make it sound good, it would be fine. Because we're the masters of alibis, right? I have to remember that first day I walked in because I felt so trapped. I felt like there was all these problems and there was no way to get around them. I was exhausted. But I have to go back because, you know, they gave me 45 minutes to talk. So I have to, you know, go back a ways. So I was born some years ago, and I was born, my dad was a surgeon, my mother went back to school when I was 10, she's all but dissertation for her PhD in psychology, so I didn't really want for stuff, I never wanted for shoes, or Girl Scout outfits, or going camping, or any of those kinds of fun things. But I always felt different, I never felt like I was normal. I never felt like I was good enough. Boys didn't like me. I was never part of the main, you know, popular crowd. I didn't dress right. I just felt awkward. I always felt outside. So, and then you know, those fun, nice kids who always fill out your weak spots and like poke at those. So those were always fun. So there were bullies in my life, some in my family, some outside, and never felt worthy of a lot of things. So I went through life thinking that I was never good enough. I grew up with a lot of love, but a lot of criticism. That constant, those minute directions, you know. My people might not have been alcoholics, but they were busy doing a lot of things alcoholics do. I need to be corrected at all times. So I finally found people who seemed to know how to play by the time I became a teenager. I didn't pick up drinks early. I mean, there was my dad would sip wine and discuss, you know, how the legs on these, and the 1978 Cabernet California was a good one. And so I grew up with that kind of healthy attitudes towards drinking. They'd always have parties at the house with adults who drank and swilled their little glasses, and the funny ones drank a little more, you know, like put their fingers in, like searching for little wieners and the little hot dog, little bin thing, whatever it was, just to make the kids laugh. And I realize now that maybe I was looking at some, maybe it would have come here had they gone on for a little bit longer. But there was always alcohol in the house, but it wasn't like anybody had them like every 5 days a week or 7 days a week at dinner. It was special occasion stuff. So when I found people that knew how to live, I thought I'd arrived. I think I smoked more pot than anything before I got to alcohol. That was fun, and it was cheap, and it was weak, and it had lots of seeds, but, you know, I knew how to deal with that. I had friends who would drink more, and they knew how to party. They really seemed to have a good time all the time. I don't remember having a drink and then feeling as if I'd arrived, but that must have been it. That must have been where I let my shoulders down, where I felt more involved with, where I was with people, where I was not below or above or in between. I was with my people. Because I don't think I ever sat all the way down. I always felt that awkward. So that was at 15, got my first boyfriend, all that fun stuff, all the crazy first year, then the second year with the second boyfriend and all that kind of good stuff. And then boys were always involved after that because that was just the way I rolled. Until I got married at 20, to a good guy who's a little older, wished him well, had like the nice breakup. You ever had like a nice breakup where everybody like divides their stuff and is kind to each other? I had one of those. How simple is that? Because I saw my parents get divorced. I didn't want one of those. So we're still friends today, even Facebook friends and everything else. We don't really talk, but, you know, there when something happens. So I did everything backwards. People in my family were supposed to go to college. I was taking college classes in high school, but I had no direction of any kind. So I started taking, I took a stage makeup class and then decided and I had some talent at it. So I thought, you know, that's awesome. Let's do this. So, I went to Joe Blasco, which is a theater and film and TV makeup studio in LA. And I got going in that, and did pretty well there for a while. So I did music videos, I did movies, nothing you'd ever heard of though, by the way, so don't even bother. I did a lot of that. I started seeing my career going up and up and up, and started seeing faces I recognize and names I'd recognize, and I'm like, who's this Master P? You know, and we were like, I had no idea who the hell that was, and little Snoop Dogg in there. Didn't smoke weed with him though, but I could have. Anyway, I saw my life becoming very, very interesting and fun, and I was with the people, and I was no longer this awkward, shy kid. Well, never shy, actually. That was another problem. I was always very loud, very first person to raise her hand kind of girl. Didn't care if I was wrong or not. I just had to say something. Because apparently I'm a little know-it-all. Anyway, I saw the trajectory of my career going really, really well, and then I started doing things like staying around after and having, you know, cocktails and smoking some weed afterwards. You know, when you're working 6 days a week and you're working 12, 14, 16 hours a day, and then comes the other stuff that helps you drink a little more and stay up a little longer. And also, you know, I was always a chunky kid, so, you know, some other things kind of helped me keep a little skinnier there, you know. Nothing too big, nothing that became more than just a habit, but alcohol is the thing that really got me. So if you come in here with more than alcohol as part of your story, welcome. we don't get here on a winning streak. No one ever told me, maybe you're drinking too much. That's just not part of my story. There's no one who says, you need to go get help. That is just not part of my story. I just started becoming miserable. I started waiting till everybody would go away so I could drink the way I wanted to. So I was very cranky. Started getting very mean to people because I really needed them to just stop moving and stop bothering me so I could drink the way I wanted to. So after, you know, screwing up my career because it started going from, you know, let's see, going up and up and up and doing all these better things, and then started going, hey, you know, let's do the late night Cinemax stuff. You know, I mean, I wasn't in them. I was a makeup artist for them. But, you know, there's no real sex happening, but why even, you know, why is there even a script kind of stuff? And wondering, you know, what happened? And then getting fired off of one of those. You know, like what? I got fired off of this? You know, like, do not give me credit for, and that's the one they gave me credit for. It's like, great. Didn't want it. Anyway, people were not doing things my way. So, a girl like me, you know, is supposed to go to school, right? So I went back to school, right? So I started getting all my GEs out of the way and everything, started going to Santa Monica College and got all that stuff, doing the GETSI so I could transfer, and was on the dean's list 3 semesters with a little, you know, outside help on that. So I could stay up late and party every weekend because I'm working all week, so I can party on the weekends, right? Because that's what it's all about, is partying on the weekends. That's the whole point of working hard so you can get party on the weekend. And I got to a point where I knew I couldn't have one drink and study. I couldn't start drinking and accomplish anything. And I kind of knew that. I don't know exactly where I figured that out. So I would just wait. So it'd be this periodic thing where I just go crazy on the weekends and you know, do everything else during the week. Because I was controlling my drinking, controlling my partying. So I got myself into Berkeley. You know? Now I thought I wanted to produce films, yes. Those people never sleep. It's just a bad combo. And they do not produce anything up there. They do all theory, which is a whole other part of my story, which becomes part of my, you know, the talking points of saying, oh, well, that just wasn't any good, you know. No, I started drinking more. I started drinking and trying to study and just getting miserable and so lost. Because then I didn't have my support people, blah, blah, blah. It just was the way it was. So I think I flunked out. I should probably check that. Did I flunk out or did I withdraw on time? I'm not really sure. But after, you know, being on the dean's list 3 semesters, that was kind of disappointing. So I kind of got really depressed to the point where I couldn't quite think right. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't speak correctly. I couldn't bring up the correct word that I wanted. I think of something similar. It was very, very difficult. So if you're new and you're having trouble saying what you mean, welcome. It does get better. So I went on some years. I did some healing because then I didn't have any money. Because, you know, an alcoholic like me goes home to mom, you know, which is how I ended up on the Central Coast. Hello. Welcome, neighbors. Because they retired up here. I found myself a little theater group, a little community theater. It's not no longer there, but started getting with some people, and one of them introduced me to the master control operations of the local TV station, which is way on the other side of the brain from doing any makeup. But I worked my butt off and worked hard there for several years until we had the big union issue. Big union fight, the downturn of the economy, et cetera, et cetera. Because I got all those buzzwords down. Those were part of how I spoke of things. Because I got screwed by the evil empire who wanted to, you know, tramp out my Ewok village, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because I'm a big injustice keeper, you know. talking about those justifiable anger. I do that really well. I can hold on to resentments for years. So I started drinking and partying. Around this time, my dad died and left me a little money. So an alcoholic with a little money, woo-woo! Yeah, it's party time. Went to Burning Man, played every weekend, you know, I'm drinking the top shelf vodka, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and then it got down to the warm, you know, 30-pack of Tecate, you know, by the time you're done. At least that's how this alcoholic rolled. And then about a year before I walked into the rooms, I was, you know, I was always looking for that comfort, right? So, you know, there were the guys and, you know, partying on the weekend and not wondering why the one-night stand that turned into the three-day weekend, which turned into the three-month relationship, wasn't happening anymore. It was just suddenly nobody wanted to keep this mess and having no clue why. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good for a girl's self-esteem. So then that one night it happened where I drank too much and woke up next to somebody. I had no idea who the hell he was, and I was covered in injuries I could not have done myself. I stopped trying to play with other people at that point. I kept going to the bar, but I was going home early and just pissed at all times. I got to the point where people stopped asking me how I was because I would tell them. So that's all I'm going to say on that one. So the last year of my drinking was very, very lonely. I didn't even tell my best friend what had happened. I was so embarrassed. It was just so completely out of my control. And that wasn't how I rolled, you know. So, the last year of my drinking was, you know, get the box of wine because it fit perfectly on that shelf. And I could fill up my 32-ounce Carl's Jr. cup with some ice because that's the kind of alcoholic I am. So I liked it a little cold. Anyway, I'm basically passing out a lot on that same recliner in my mother's house because that's the kind of alcoholic I became. And then one day I hadn't planned on doing a lot of drink. Well, I mean, I drank a little wine with my friend and all this stuff down the street. But then I said, oh, well, I'll just go down the street and go have another drink. Have another cocktail. It wasn't quite done, right? That same place where I'd say, I probably shouldn't go there because that gets me so I'm like more blacking out when I go to that place. Is that place because they pour kind of heavy and just go to my intended destination in the first place. You know, where there's more people and more interesting. I remember ordering my second drink at my second destination. I don't remember much after that. I kind of came in and out of consciousness, screaming at the top of my lungs at my mother. I had had a hold of her hands. I thought she had the remote control in her hand, and I was like, you're not paying attention, you're not listening, something, and I'm screaming at this woman. I'm coming up in and out of this blackout, remembering this part. That night, I got arrested, sitting outside my house, having a smoke, drinking my 32 ounces, it was actually soda that time, because apparently I was able to go through the drive-thru at, you know, Jack in the Box, and paid for, I don't remember any of it. I thought that I got arrested for drunk in public. I was like, this is my house. It was dark. I was, what are you, you turn the lights on me? What, like, are you kidding me? And then the cop kicked me. Yeah, lovely. Remember that part, sort of later. And going, well, I didn't really think, I said, if they're going to kick a girl like me, what are they going to do to other people? So I thought that they needed to have a talking to with that woman. I never did press. I was like, as soon as I get this cleared up, you know, then we're going to talk about that one. Yeah, I limped for a couple weeks after that one. Because she didn't frisk me. She just kicked my foot. Anyway. So after that, I lived at a friend's house. He had a little blow-up mattress in the other room. And then the last 3 days of my drinking, I slept in the parking lot at the bar. The first night was kind of an accident because there were no rooms at the inn kind of thing. And then it just became okay until that morning when my bartender says, oh, yeah, I saw your car parked here. You know, and then it was just over. I mean, I had washed my car, so at least I didn't look homeless. I had... You know, I had towels on the wall, on the windows, and I had bought some more of those, you know, truck-sized reflecting things, so at least I looked like I was just parked, instead of having towels in my windows. And I actually just gave that away to somebody who's got a truck, who's now homeless right now, because she lost her place due to drinking. And I'm like, wow, these actually, they've been sitting in my trunk this whole time. It's like waiting for her. And that was the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. I smelled like boozy sweat. I'd showered down at the beach because Pismo, there was a shower down there. But my car reeked of alcohol for weeks after that. Just boozy sweat smell. I was just so exhausted. But like I said, that just took that when I finally said I'm an alcoholic. I knew everything was going to change. I thought I'd be so lonely. That was one of the things that was like my last, like holding on to. I'm going to be so lonely. What am I going to do? Everything I do is going to parties or going to sit at the bar. I mean, where's my, who am I going to talk to that I might relate with? Because I don't relate to any of these people around me, right? I've never been lonely since. I found my people. Welcome. If you don't feel like you're quite one of us, one of us, one of us, welcome home. So, I had no idea what I was doing one minute to the next. Someone would ask me, an old timer would say, well, what are you doing right now? I'm like, I have absolutely no idea. So I started going to, 7 o'clock is way too early for me. Sorry, guys. You're 7 a.m.ers. I'll probably never see you unless you come to one of these meetings. So I started going to a noon meeting. I'd go to a 5:30, and then we have like a 7 or 7:30 up on the Mesa or whatever. I started going to big book studies. I go to 12 and 12 studies. I was doing Living Sober. I was doing, at some point, it's not an AA book, but Drop the Rock. I was doing... A daily reflections meeting of anything. I went from at noon, I would go to my meeting, and then I would go sit at the end of Grand in the Finn's parking lot there with my 32 ounce soda and read the book. In fact, if you look at my book, it looks like I've hit it with every type of pen and highlighter possible. And I just sat there for hours till the 5:30 meeting started, and then I'd get down there for that, and I'd help do whatever. I'd make coffee, and I'd pour coffee, and whatever I needed to do, and just I couldn't do anything else but AA. And then eventually I started getting service commitments. I just kept showing up. I just keep showing up, and it looks like there's something that needs to be done. If you think the floor needs to be cleaned or something, just clean the floor. It's not for someone else to do. You're the one that's bothering. Clean the floor. There's a little something on the table, you know, because I'm the kind of person, I want that perfection. I'm like, don't you see this right here? Don't you see that? That needs to be rubbed out. Don't you think? And I'm never going to tell you about it because it bothers me. And it just is so weird because none of it matters. So I started doing that. I started making sure that newcomers had a big book and had a phone list and all this stuff. I had nothing to give them, but I could do that. That much. Do you have a meeting schedule? Do you have a... And I'm still really big on doing that because that's what worked when I first came in, and I keep doing that. I do announcements. Anybody who knows me at meetings, I do lots of announcements because I'm a crazy person like that because, you know, I got to use my know-it-all for good and not evil. So I got information to give you, right? So it helps keep me sober. By keeping myself plugged in, keeping my brain in AA. So I do the Back to the 40s meeting, which covers all 12 steps and 5 Wednesday nights, which, by the way, this week is coming up on steps 10, 11, and 12. If anybody's interested, 7 p.m. at the Mesa on Wednesday nights. And it starts over again with step 1 the next week after that at the Five Cities group. 7 p.m. Wednesday night.
Thank you.
We have a read for that whenever possible. I help pour coffee. Whatever needs to be done, I just take care of it. It's one of my regular meetings. I'm on the convention committee, so I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, be sure to, you know, sign up for the 22nd District Committee meeting. You can sign up for marathon meetings on there, too, if you'd like to be of service when you register at district22convention.org, because I'm also part of promotions on that. So if I didn't say it, and there's a flyer up there. If I don't have a service commitment, I mean, why would I show up? I got a sponsor right away. In fact, it was just before my 40th birthday, and I had my new sponsor and another lady from AA sitting next to me at my birthday dinner. I don't walk these rooms alone. Women help women for obvious reasons, and men help men for obvious reasons. But it doesn't mean we can't be a little helpful and point you in the right direction. If you're new, it's probably better that way. I don't think it says it anywhere in the book, but it's suggested, you know. Don't get into new relationships in your first year. Don't quit jobs or move or do any of that stuff if you can possibly help it. But those are just suggestions. I didn't date for 5 years. Yeah. So then, like an alcoholic, I joined 6 dating websites. I dated in the last month before this. I dated 10 different guys 13 times because, you know, I turned it into a, yeah. So I turned it into, because I'm looking for just one. So then I may have found him, seems like. It's been less than a month, but I have no idea where the hell he came out of because it seems out of left field, and I am enjoying myself, which is awesome because I had no intention of getting started until I was going to do it right, because I'm an alcoholic, right? So, anyway, having a lovely time with someone who's appropriate for me. How crazy is that? Someone my own age. He is so, so cute. And sweet and funny, can cook, and I appreciate it all, and I get to be in the moment with him. I get to be there. We don't even turn on the TV. We haven't turned on the TV once. How crazy is that? Don't need the distractions because there's stuff going on in my head. I can actually be there. Because my alcoholic brain says I want to get a little crazy. I want to think of everything that's not going my way in life, right? So I stay there. Anyone who knows me, I won't get into the details because this is AA, but I am civically engaged out there. And I don't take things personally anymore. Just things are how they are. Now, that doesn't mean I don't stand up for myself or stand up for what I think is right. It just means that I don't take it personally. Because a wilderness grudge can take, for years. Seriously, hold on to it for years. That is my nature. I have to let things go. So when I got back to the 40s was very helpful for me because it covers all those 12 steps. And it has this one thing when we make that 4-step inventory and it breaks it down. So you're just filling in one little block at a time. Because an alcoholic like me wants to talk about all the feelings wrapped up into everything. I want to just have it all rolled up the way it's been for years, all tied up in resentments and hurt feelings and, you know, bright colors and anger, terrors, and whatever it looks like, and just be pissed about it. So that it breaks it down. So you're talking about one block. You talk about the person, place, the little, you know, person, people, institutions, and principles that you're pissed at. Then you move on over to why you're angry, and then what it hurt. And then you get over here. Oh, what was your part in it? I have nothing but justified resentments. What are you talking about? Yeah, start filling in those little blocks one at a time. It's amazing. It just pulls it all apart. Pulls it out into its parts. If it happened to you, you'd be pissed too. Well, I'm sitting there wrapped up. I'm the only one getting hurt. Drinking poison, expecting the other person to die. Like, it's horrible. I had no joy left in my life. I couldn't see the beautiful day outside. Everything was yeah, but. I shoulda, woulda, coulda. I would have done differently if I knew that this was going to happen and everything else. Because I'm the victim here. We talk about that we become professional victims or victimizers, or maybe a little bit of both. So that night that I woke, it was coming up out of the blackout, I smacked my mother. Now, I had an older brother who used to beat the crap out of me, so I can really make a fist and I know how to defend myself, and I really could have hurt her badly. Luckily, I hit her open-handed, apparently, and hit her on the top of her head, saying she wasn't listening. I don't remember, but I take responsibility for that night. Never happened before, and hopefully it'll never happen again. But I can't make her any promises, and I don't make people promises like that anymore. I say, I'll meet you tomorrow at the pool. We're going to the old lady tank. We're going to get some exercise in, Mom. Let's do this. And if she shows up or not, I show up. And then I go to a meeting afterwards. Because that's what I do. I'm outside. I go to a meeting. There's a meeting starting somewhere. I'm in Morro Bay. There's a meeting starting somewhere. I'm out of town. There's a meeting starting somewhere. It's in noon, 7 a.m. There's probably something happening. And I just look it up. You know, technology is a wonderful thing. If I travel, I make sure I know where a meeting is before I get there so that I have that already in my head in case I get wrapped up in something. In case I get tangled, you know? You ever get tangled? So, oh yeah, I always forget this part. I walked into the rooms on 9/30/2012, so that makes me 5.5 years sober. 5 years, 8 months, and so many days, something like that. Who's counting? I used to keep track of all my meetings. I used to write down everything, and then if there's a little nugget I got from it, I have those little, you know, those little self-help attendance cards. Yeah, and I stopped doing those at about 1,200 days. I just keep the last one in here. Because it's like I needed to prove myself. I needed to prove where I was. And even at 2 years sober, Mom was just like, I was helping my friend get her house ready to move. And I was going to meetings down there all the time. And my mom's just like, what are you doing down there? You know, it's all suspicious. And it doesn't matter. I said, you know what? I've been to 12 meetings since I've been here, Mom. And I go, if you find out that I've been doing something other than what I've been telling you I'm doing, then you let me know. Because I no longer have to get angry over people not getting it. People not understanding me, you know, all this, it's me, right? Has that nice prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. And I'm supposed to, where are you? Page 99 in your 12 and 12. If you're interested. So I can be a channel of thy peace, for the sadness may bring joy, etc., etc. I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love rather than to love. And it's all about what I'm doing and not worrying about what everybody else is doing. How crazy is that? Instead of being all up into whatever everybody else is measuring up somehow, isn't being a good roommate, doesn't put the toilet seat down, isn't doing the dishes right, isn't being a good collaborator. So now I'm on the convention committee. It's like herding cats in there, but we have a good time. It all gets done. I like it. Because I no longer can get my hands off of it. I just go, okay. Except now next year, they want me to be chair next year. I'm like, you want me to do what? So But I'm following in some good footsteps that will help me. So I know I don't do this alone. Even that I won't be doing alone. I'll have everybody who's come before me to help me. Because it's a rotating committee. So if I don't give this away, I don't get to keep it. And that's one of those ways I do it. Every month I show up. I think I just keep showing up. I'm going to have a new boyfriend now, so a couple of my meetings are kind of like, well, I'm not really going Thursdays, you know. But I'm still going Tuesday and Wednesdays, and I go to Saturdays most of the time. As Joseph's laughing at me, thank you, Joseph, for asking me. I really appreciate you. I'm honored to be here. I spoke last year, May, here. And I always bring my book up because it's, I want to quote something, I want to do it accurately. Because the program's in that book. If you haven't read it yet, suggest reading the first 164 pages of the big book right away, as soon as you can. Just get it all down, go to big book study at 12 and 12. Get a men or a women's meeting. Find your people. When they say, we're going to coffee, you want to come with? Go with. Just say yes. My second year, I have written down the book. I just started saying yes to things, to certain people. I would just say yes. I wouldn't worry about, you know, whether what and had to, and whether it fit on time. I just say yes. And I have wound up in the most amazing places because I say yes. I don't have to have it fit this target of what something's supposed to be, or fit in this little slot, or that person's talking too long, or I'm supposed to be, you know, I'm going to be leaving. You know, I tend to run late. I do not do any of this perfectly. Sure, I've flipped a few people off on the freeway. Some of them more recently. But I didn't do it with anger. See, there's the difference. That's the progress, right? It was more of a, you know what you did. But I wasn't angry. That's how that works in my life. It's not the anger. It's the stopping me from getting angry. I don't need to get that horrible, nasty feeling running around in me anymore. Because sometimes we like being there. Sometimes we get snuggled up in there and want to stay there because it's something familiar and somehow comfortable, even though it feels like hell. We just know what it feels like. So my job is to stay out of those emotional entanglements. My job is to not go there. I've had to deal with someone in sobriety. I've been dealing with them for a long time. And I've had to have outside help to deal with this person. And it's okay. Because I no longer expect people to step up and be anything. I no longer expect them to get to that bar of fairness or equality or anything else, or common sense or reasonableness. I can have outside people handle that and be okay with handing my box of tears over for that. It took a while, but I eventually did. Finally went to the doctor after 3 months of sobriety and like just said, okay, check me out, see what's going on there, and came out with a clean bill of health. I was shocked. I thought the weight would drop off me because I wasn't drinking beer anymore, right? And that didn't happen. Thanks, over 40. Now I'm getting to the old lady tank with my mom, you know, and I'm just doing it, you know, 10 times more than they are. And those little pants that I bought are fit me today. So things are going well there because I'm putting in the work and not just expecting it to happen. Not talking about it, just showing up. And it's like, I'm going to the pool tomorrow. Perhaps you'll meet me there. That's it. Well, it's actually a text because mom now knows how to text. You know, she's texting in emojis, which is really cute. I'm just so proud of her. She taught me to tie my shoes. I get to be a daughter today instead of this lump on a recliner in her living room with a bad attitude. I get to be helpful and not just in the ways that seem like, well, we got to do it my way or I'm not doing it at all. I mean, it doesn't mean I do that perfectly either. I'm still not touching her dishwasher. She's got the knives pointed up. I still won't do it. Nope, nope, not doing that. But there's a lion answering me. I get to be a friend. Think any of those people called to see where I was after I stopped going to the bar? Nobody cares. I bet if I walked in there, they'd be like, "Nah," and hold up my drink glass again. Right? That's no longer my life. So I go to meetings. I've been doing AA very, very steadily for the last 5 years. I never went out again. I walked in and I sat all the way down the first day when I said I was an alcoholic. I try not to say a whole lot I do not mean. And if something doesn't feel true, I won't feel comfortable saying it. So sometimes truth just flies out of my mouth about whatever it is I've been up to, even if it doesn't sound very nice. It just is what it is. And that's just about me. That's not about talking about other people. Because the spiritual principle behind that first step is we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, our lives have become unmanageable. And if I cannot be honest about that, there's no way I can do the rest of the steps. I think they're in order for a reason. If I can't achieve self-honesty, I can't do this thing. So I have sponsees. My sponsor just moved away, and this is me telling on myself I now need to get a new sponsor because she moved away now a month and a half ago, and I'm still sponsorless, so I need to tell on myself now. So I need to do that. Because again, we don't do this alone. I have to have somebody to bounce things off of. Sometimes I said, be nice to your sponsees because one day they might be your sponsor. Yeah. Wow. I'm always impressed when I see somebody that didn't quite come in the first time that's come in and sit all the way down. So if you're a retread, I really appreciate you guys. Because you know what? I can listen and hear your story and not want to do that. Because I've never heard a good story of someone who came back in. But you can't do it just once so far. It's only been 5 years. I like my 5 years. I'd like to keep them. And I've seen people raise their hand after they've been here for a while and raise their hand as a newcomer again. And that gives me courage to see it. Because I know what to do if my ass falls off. To drag it into a meeting. So that's plenty of stuff for me. I really appreciate you. I don't know, you guys do this every week? Every month? But thank you.
Let's give her another round. Available after the meeting, so thank you. If you'd like